From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. After a phone call between the two leaders, U.S. President Donald Trump thanked Russian President Vladimir Putin for remarks he made Thursday acknowledging America's strong economic performance. According to the White House, the two spoke following Putin's annual press conference in Moscow. They discussed how to work together to address North Korea's nuclear and ballistic weapons program. The Kremlin also acknowledged that the two discussed relations between their two countries and agreed to stay in contact. The Kremlin emphasized that Mr. Trump initiated the call. Putin also warned the U.S. against using force against North Korea. Mr. Trump has repeatedly said that all options remain on the table. U.S. President Trump's envoy to the United Nations says undeniable evidence proves Iran is violating international law by funneling missiles to Houthi rebels in Yemen. U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Nikki Haley stood in front of missile debris on display in a hangar at a military base in Washington, D.C.
This evidence is part of what has led the U.S. intelligence community to conclude unequivocally that these weapons were supplied by the Iranian regime. The evidence is undeniable. The weapons might as well have had Made in Iran stickers all over it.
Haley says the missile parts bear markings showing they originate in Iran. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is joining members of the United Nations Security Council Friday to discuss putting maximum pressure on North Korea to abandon its nuclear program just days after he appeared to extend an olive branch to Pyongyang. The State Department said Tillerson would call on all UNSC members to work together to continue the economic and diplomatic pressure against North Korea. This is VOA News. For his part, U.N. Secretary General weighed in on the North Korea issue from Japan, where he was meeting with the Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. Gutierrez spoke to reporters in Tokyo.
I think it is important for all parties to understand the urgency of finding a solution, avoiding the kind of confrontation that could have tragic consequences for everybody.
Two Reuters news agency journalists have been arrested in Myanmar, and Reuters has called for their immediate release. While Lone and Kayo Sa-U were arrested for possessing important secret papers obtained from two policemen who had worked in Rakhine State, violence blamed on security forces has forced more than 630,000 minority Rohingya Muslims to flee into neighboring Bangladesh. Reuters Southeast Asia Bureau Chief John Chalmers says the journalist faced the possibility of years in prison.
So Reuters president and editor-in-chief Steve Adler has called the detention of Wallon and KCO a blatant attack on press freedom, and he has called for their immediate release. Unfortunately, we haven't had any response yet from the Myanmar authorities, and we're still waiting to hear how things are going to unfold from here.
Human Rights Watch has condemned the arrest and echoed calls for their release. U.S. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert said that Washington is watching the situation closely. The White House said on Thursday that it supports the Federal Communications Commission's vote to repeal 2015 rules governing the Internet. The FCC voted 3-2 Thursday to implement a new policy, Light Touch Plan, on regulating the Internet. FCC chairman, appointed by President Trump, said the new plan ends what he says is the U.S. government's micromanaging of the Internet. At least 17 people are dead, another 15 wounded, after a suicide bomber attacked the main police training facility in Mogadishu, Somalia. Police were rehearsing for an upcoming parade commemorating the 74th anniversary of the creation of Somalia's police force when the bomber entered the police academy early Thursday disguised as a policeman. The state-run Somali National News Agency says the man was wearing a tracksuit and emerged from residential areas near the academy before detonating his explosive vest. The militant Islamic group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for the attack, claiming 27 police officers were killed. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Liu Kang said China submitted an official protest with the United States Thursday after President Trump signed into law a measure that could result in U.S. naval warships visiting Taiwan. Mr. Trump signed the defense budget legislation and authorized the possible mutual visits in Taiwan. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, December 15th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. The United States suspends aid to the Somali military, but an analyst says it's a wrong move.
It's a very, very premature and unwarranted decision on the part of the U.S. government. I think this is a good day for Al-Shabaab and a bad day for those who want to fight against terrorism.
Faiza Roble is a leading Somali political analyst. Some supporters of the party that first challenged the results of Liberia's October 10th election results have now declared their support for Senator George Weah. Meanwhile, Vice President Joseph Boakai calls for party unity. And Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party opens an extraordinary Congress today, Friday, as the president calls for the lifting of sanctions.
We call for the unconditional lifting of the political and economic sanctions which have crippled our national development. We realize that isolation is not splendid or viable.
That's Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa. In Sierra Leone, the opposition Citizens Democratic Coalition says the arrest of its preferred presidential candidate is politically motivated, and the U.S. seeks the resettlement of 1,300 migrants. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A leading Somali political analyst says a decision by the United States to suspend food and fuel aid to the Somali military is a premature and unwarranted decision. The Reuters news agency reported Thursday that the U.S. suspended the aid over corruption concerns. The report also says the U.S. has been frustrated that its successive Somali governments have failed to build a viable national army. But Somali political analyst Faiza Roble says the U.S. decision benefits the terrorist group Al-Shabaab, and it's a bad day for those who want to fight against terrorism.
It's a very, very premature and unwarranted decision on the part of the U.S. government for several reasons. Number one, this is a new government, and they have been in office since February of 2017. So they haven't even gotten around the issues that they need to address. That's number one. Number two, there is a significant U.S. citizens who are working in Somalia as we speak, including the president, who, if they fall prey to the Al-Shabaab attacks, can be a disastrous situation. The third issue is that, as you alluded, there are about 500 U.S. specialists and soldiers training in the Somali National Army. And with the withdrawal of the U.S. aid to the Somali National Army, harm may be fallen on the American soldiers in the theater. So I think it's a very bad decision, and it will impact both U.S. citizens, U.S. interests, as well as the overall recovery of Somalia.
But it can also be said that the U.S., I think it has claimed that it's been pumping money into the Somali military, but nothing good has come out because you continue to see a destable government in Somalia. Al-Shabaab continue to strike at the heart of the government.
Yes, and this has been a long-standing criticism, not only the U.S., but EU, Africa Union, everybody has been leveling against the Somali government. The question that needs to be debated at this point in time is whether the U.S. action is a premature, and Somalia is just one of the areas that it found easy to cut because, as you know, U.S. is scaling down its involvement in the entire continent and in Africa in general. But I think the argument that's made today in Mogadishu is whether this is the right timing or not. Yes, the president as well as the Somali general in the army have admitted that a level of corruption has been persistent and tenacious in Somalia. What they are saying is they have not been given enough time, at least for this current administration, to even say, yes, you are right, we couldn't control corruption, or yes, we have a plan, and here is the plan, and we are willing to work with the U.S. State Department. I think this is a bonanza. This is a good day for Al-Shabaab and a bad day for those who want to fight against terrorism.
How much aid was the United States given to the Somali military?
It's not really significant compared to the EU and others. You're talking about $100 stipend given to Somali soldiers, which are about 26,000. And I don't know if the U.S. gives all of them, but all the aid put together, the figures are no more than $50 million. And whereas Somalia receives aid to the tune of $250, $270 million from others. So It's not a big substantial, but it was a good token. It was a good gesture to see that the U.S. is fighting alongside Somalia. The question is whether Somalia would take this as a lesson to be learned and clean its act and come up with its own resources to fight al-Shabaab. I think in some circles in Somalia today, they don't see this as a big negative thing because Somalia has gotten too dependent on outside world to the extent that there is no national flavor and national spirit to even regain their land. So some circles are celebrating outside al-Shabaab. Varied interest groups see this maybe as a blessing in disguise.
And this is coming also, I think, the African Union force there in Somalia is preparing to leave Somalia perhaps at the end of 2020.
Yes, and this has been a lingering complaint because they see Somalia as a black hole where things are being put into and nothing comes out, especially African Union complaining about the fact that Somali soldiers are not fighting for the national interest but for parochial clan interests, so they're fed up. So maybe everybody is now coming to a consensus where they want to leave Somalia to its own design and schemes to solve its own problem. I think maybe this is an inevitable consequence of the corruption that Somalia has refused to stamp out.
Faisal Robley is a leading Somali political analyst. He was speaking with me from Los Angeles, California. Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa will today, Friday, address the ruling ZANU-PF party's extraordinary congress, where he is largely expected to be endorsed as its leader and candidate for the 2018 presidential election. This comes exactly a month after the army forced President Robert Mugabe to step down. Sebastian Mofu in Harare looks at what the Mnangagwa government has done so far and what rights groups are saying.
Super, Mdara, super. We are so glad and happy for this country. This is the first time we can actually say Zimbabwe. We have a former president.
That was the excitement and euphoria that gripped Zimbabwe when news of the resignation of the 93-year-old Mugabe was announced. A month later, Mnangagwa is now in office as president of Zimbabwe, and he has promised to change so many things to stabilize the economy. But he sees a hurdle.
Going forward, we call for the unconditional lifting of the political and economic sanctions which have crippled our national development. We realize that isolation is not splendid or viable, as there is more to gain through solidarity. Government will thus pursue a robust re-engagement process to fully affirm our belonging to the family of nations.
That was him on Thursday at a meeting of ZANU-PF's Central Committee in Harare. But the opposition and civic leaders say nothing on the ground has changed for the West to lift sanctions imposed on Mnangagwa and other senior ZANU-PF officials in 2002 following reports of human rights abuses and election rigging. Dewa Mavinga, who has the Human Rights Watch in Southern Africa, was among Zimbabwe's opposition and civic leaders that testified before the U.S. Congress on Tuesday and asked the international community to push Harare to ensure a free and fair election expected around mid-2018. He told me it was too early for Mnangagwa to be calling for removal of sanctions on him and other senior ZANU-PF officials, who include former President Mugabe.
After the military takeover in November that led to Mnangagwa becoming president of Zimbabwe, a key challenge and benchmark for his presidency is now to ensure that the military returns to the barracks. Critical to free and fair elections is to ensure that the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission is independent, professional, and non-partisan.
On Thursday, Zimbabwe's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Moyo, said next year's elections will be, quote, free, fair, transparent, and violent free, unquote. For now, it seems his main aim is to unite his divided ZANU-PF party and to prop up Zimbabwe's moribund economy, something which he promised when he took over power last month. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butt in Washington. Today is Friday, December 15th. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. In Liberia, some supporters of the party that first challenged the results of the country's October 10th election on Thursday declared their support for the candidacy of Senator George Weah of the Coalition for Democratic Change. Weah will face incumbent Vice President Joseph Boakai of the ruling Unity Party in a runoff election on December 26. Among the Liberty Party officials who announced their support were Vice Standard Bearer Harrison Kanwie, Campaign Chief Executive Officer Musa Ability, and Liberty Party Chairman Benjamin Sanvi. Here is Mr. Sanvi with the announcement.
We signed the Ganta Declaration. We committed to bringing each other along. We campaigned fearlessly. We fought hard. Many people here today, we went at it. It was a tough, tough campaign. It was a campaign for the ages. Many people here today never imagined that this day will come. But what has brought this day is because we hold sacred to our word. Many are coming. Many are coming. Some will come in different forms and in different shapes. The door is open. I know it's open now because I feel at home. George Weah, your story is the Liberian story. Your story is the Liberian story. Do not let your people down. Do not let your people down. You come, they call you the Rock of Gibraltar. They call you the heroes of the slum dwellers. The only difference between you and those young men and women that are walking out there is that God bless you. And he bless you through your legs, that you went forth and did wonders and you conquered the world. My message to you, Mr. President, do not let your people down. We have a moment. This is our moment. This is our time. This is the time that Liberia will rise again. You have a people's president now. You have the one who the people themselves has risen up. You have the one who the people themselves has been persistent in knocking on the doors and saying, give him a chance. Senator Weah, the trust of your people, do not let them down. We, from the Liberty Party, we believe we committed to opposition solidarity.
But three Liberty Party senior executives say the decision to endorse Senator George Weah's candidacy was reached without the consent of the party's National Executive Committee. Here is Representative Gabriel Smith.
We have come as executive of the party to dissociate the Liberty Party from their sinister plan intended to honor court, honor mine, subvert the authority of our standard bearer and the entire National Executive Committee, and to plunge our party in a state of dilemma. We want to make it very clear to them that the Liberty Party, as a political institution grounded on the foundation of democratic governance, will at the appropriate time, through its requisite mechanism, make a statement to the nation as to whether we will endorse or remain neutral and allow every single individual to go his way.
In another development, incumbent Vice President Joseph Boakai, who is a presidential candidate of the ruling Unity Party, on Thursday appealed to President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf to lead in bringing about party unity ahead of the December 26th presidential runoff election.
I particularly call on my sister and Senator Bearer Emeritus of the Unity Party to continue to play the leadership role and help to strengthen our hands in forging unity within our great party and nation. Anyone who has followed my relationship with the President Sirleaf over the past 12 years, we know that not one day have we had any occasion to be disrespectful to one another. I wish to acknowledge all UP partisans, all collaborators and well-wishers to continue to exercise deference and to accord due courtesy and respect to the party and the national leader, especially our standard bearer, American President Ellen Johnson.
Senior officials of Sierra Leone's opposition party coalition, the Citizens Democratic Coalition, are meeting to determine if the arrest of their preferred presidential candidate for next year's presidential election was politically motivated. The CDC is a coalition of five political parties which plan to have Musa Tararali represent the group in the March 7th general election as the presidential candidate. Local media reports say police arrested Tararali over allegations of forgery about land transactions when he was the cabinet minister in charge of lands. The police have yet to announce the reason behind Tararali's arrest. Gabriel Tula, chairman of the opposition CDC, tells viewers Peter Clotty that the party would not be unsettled in its efforts to wrestle power from the ruling APC party in next year's poll.
We are not bothered about his arrest and detention and other things. But we only believe that the man we are intending to make a flag bearer to contest the 2018 elections cannot be suppressed in terms of, you know, trying to discourage his intention or any attempt, you know, to deviate his attention, you know, from eyeing the presidency of this country. So I believe the entire membership of the party and other supporters are not moved at all by the action of any other authority.
Why do you think arrest is politically motivated to suppress the party's anticipated presidential candidate? What proof do you have to that?
All I can say is government has the right to call somebody and question if they feel somebody has committed any criminal offense in any state. But in this situation, we have to be very careful and observe the situation and see whether it is politically motivated or there is any other attempt, you know, to just discourage him from furthering his intention to become, you know, the flag bearer of our political party.
Mr. Tula, have the police informed you about the rationale behind his arrest?
Well, it is not now our concern now to ask or to question the authority of the police. We are not in discussion with the police. We are in discussion with the members of the political party. Internally, we are at a meeting discussing what is the way forward to see whether this is not a calculated ploy, you know, to discourage our presidential flag bearer from participating in the 2018 electoral process.
Is everything all right with your party? Because two leaders of your party are displeased that you went into coalition with other political parties ahead of next year's election.
Well, you see, in any situation, especially in Africa and Sierra Leone particularly, you must have people who always become dissatisfied, especially when you have a good intention, you know, political intention, to see how far we can sanitize the politics of this country. You must have detractors, obviously. But all I can say is the majority of party members are supporting the move that we are taking to form a coalition.
Julius Doni, your national organizing secretary and one of the youth leaders, are displeased with it. How do you bring them on board to chart a same objective or cause ahead of next year's election that will not undermine your efforts to win power from the ruling APC?
Julius himself has declared for another coalition, that is the National Grand Coalition, headed by Dr. Yomkela. So he has declared for him, and for over 2 months now, he has been advocating that the party should join the NGC coalition. I have told him this is not the right time, you know, for us to join, you know, another party for a coalition. Let us contest the elections and see how far, to what extent we are going to, you know, succeed in this political dissension. But he has gone ahead to declare for Yomkela, and he wants all members of the party to follow him, which is not the right direction. And we are not going to allow him as a party that is well organized enough, that is structurally established, you know, to just subdue itself to any other coalition.
Gabriel Tula is the chairman of Sierra Leone's Opposition Citizens Democratic Coalition. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital of Freetown. The United Nations Refugee Agency this week said it was desperately seeking resettlement places for 1,300 migrants currently stranded in Libya. Abdul Rahul Nkonde, UNHCR's representative in Niger, tells Ricky Stryer about plans to evacuate migrants from Libya into Niger in the coming weeks.
The objective through this kind of memorandum is to ensure that Niger territory is used as an extension of Libya territory for solution and protection. pending, I mean, search of a solution. And the solution we are talking about is resettlement. So there was the first group that was evacuated a few weeks ago. It was about 25 individuals who were in a very despair and vulnerable conditions to which our people, our colleagues in Libya, they were able to have access to. So the authorities of Niger have basically accepted, I mean, for this group to arrive in order to learn more from this process, how the European countries, in this case France, will be able to come and then have access to the group, conduct the interview, and then see exactly how long they will remain in the territory before they can then go for resettlement in France.
That was Abdul Raouf Nkonde, UNHCR's representative in Niger. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Dakar. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin in Kenya, where a solitary goal from Waivone Isuza put Kenya into the final of the 2017 SACAFA Senior Challenge Cup as they beat Burundi 1-0 in the semi-final at the Moi Stadium in Kisumu on Thursday. The victory sees the hosts reaching their 13th final and will meet the winner between Uganda and Zanzibar on Sunday. Paul Put is the Harambee Stars coach.
We tried to get the full concentration of the players. I think it went good up until so far. So we have a good group who were disciplined. So now they have been going through the semi-finals. So I think it's important for the boys to show them to the Kenyan people, also for themselves to prove their quality. And inshallah, tomorrow we can have a good result.
Elsewhere, South Africa and Lesotho are through to the 2017 COSAFA Cup semis to set up a meeting in Saturday's final. Amajita of South Africa defeated Egypt 1-0 in the first match at the Nkana Stadium with Luvuyo Makatsana netting the decisive goal. Thabo Sanong, head coach of the Amajita, says his team has got their eyes on the title.
Yeah, we'll take one game at a time. It's just back to training, work hard again, analyze the Egyptians, correct our few mistakes, and then go and work hard for another 90 minutes.
Lesotho, meanwhile, defeated Uganda 6-5 on penalties after the two sides played to a goalless stalemate in the second match. Staying with football, Nigeria Football Federation First Vice President Seyi Akinwumi is to head a four-man panel to unravel the issues behind the slip that led to Nigeria forfeiting the 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifying match against Algeria in Constantine on the 10th of November 2017. It means that Nigeria still finished top of Group B, but with 13 points behind of 14, while Algeria's total at the bottom is now 4 rather than 2. The concluding March of the Group B of the African Series of the Russia 2018 qualifying round ended in a 1-1 draw, but FIFA awarded all 3 points to Algeria following Nigeria's use of ineligible defender Abdullahi Shehu in their encounter. Seyi Akinwumi says his committee, which has 2 weeks to submit its report, will, among other things, recommend appropriate sanctions and also make other recommendations that will forestall such error in the future.
So it can't be all bad. The important thing is to learn from this and thank God that it came at the time where we have the opportunity of a second chance. Hmm. But it doesn't derail our intention, our motivation.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend, and we look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A leading Somali political analyst says a decision by the United States to suspend food and fuel aid to the Somali military is a premature and unwarranted decision. The Reuters news agency reported Thursday that the U.S. suspended the aid over corruption concerns. And that is it for this Friday, December 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a good weekend.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show.
designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.